waiting for the live feed, so I haven't been. Ready to go? Sure. Good morning, Liminal Church. For those of you who are here and those of you who are online, welcome. It's good to see you this morning, or to know you're there even if I don't see you. If we have any visitors this morning, this may not be what you expect when you come to a church in terms of decor. I would love to tell you that we had a meeting that said that we needed to spruce up our church a little bit, and this is what they came up with. But in truth, we have a play going on, and if any of you have not already seen it, I think there's tickets for tonight still and then for next weekend. I saw it last night, and it is delightful. And I'm not just saying that because I'm one of the writers. The other plays are fantastic, too. So this morning is a contemplative service, and today it's a little more hybrid than usual because I have a goal in mind, and the goal is to make you love a piece of music that I love, and we'll see if I'm successful with that. Time out. Dan, if you want to leave that ambient music going on in the background, that'd be fine. I gave James a day off for good behavior because he's been leading the band for the play. And last night I told him, I said, look, if you don't feel like coming, you know, don't worry about it. Never thinking that he actually wouldn't show up. So we'll have canned music today. Anyway, as most of you know, my background is in classical music, and I love it still. In the mornings when I play keyboards on the contemplative days, if you're paying attention to me, which I really hope you're not, you would probably hear bits of melodies of Mozart and Bach and maybe even a little Brahms. Classical music is a part of me. And that being said, there was a time in my life as a church keyboardist when it seemed right to explore other styles of music as well. Contemporary styles that might connect more with the people that were worshiping the pews, or seats as it were. And I have to say, when some of my classical friends heard about that, I thought of it as an expansion rather than a defection, but I came under a bit of fire and a lot of criticism and a lot of questioning. Because styles of worship are deeply personal to people, it turns out, and meaningful to many. And there have been many a battleground that I've looked at in history and thought, this is stupid that people would fight over such a thing. And the battle over the style of music that is appropriate for worship has been waging since the beginning of church. In fact, the church through the ages and even now have split over the styles of worship. People have been ejected from congregations and pastors have resigned. So when I came under fire for switching from anthems to choruses, I decided to enter into dialogue and see what the problem was. And some of it was just stupid, like drums are not appropriate for church. Okay, well, tell that to King David. Rhythms that occur in contemporary worship put us in touch with our baser natures, which is probably exactly where God wants to meet you. There is no depth to the lyrics. Well, I wonder if anyone's read the lyrics to Highlands lately. And Chris isn't here this morning, probably because he too is burned out from the play, but I will forever thank him for introducing that song to this church. Well, I could go on and on. But on the bright side, where there's controversy, there's engagement. And I have a favorite worship song that is going to form the basis for our contemplation this morning. And honestly, it is one of the more controversial lyrics. So before we start, I want to acknowledge there will be an elephant in the room. And we will address it in good time. But please, let's let the elephant sit. And not get distracted from what God might be saying or doing between now and then. This particular song was written by John Mark McMillan and was made famous by the David Crowder Band. McMillan wrote the song from following a deep personal tragedy. He and his dear friend had attended a youth conference, and after one session, his friend told him, upon looking out over the attendees, "I would truly give my life for these." Tragically, that very evening, he was killed in an auto accident. McMillan, in an attempt to come to grips with the loss of his friend, did what he does. He poured his heart into the music. And as he did so, he was overwhelmed by something. And I truly suspect, as a writer myself, that when he sat down to write, what actually came out was very unexpected. He was overwhelmed by the unexpected love of God. Gobsmacked, as it were. He recognized the close presence of God as he navigated his grief, and he was overwhelmed by the strength of it. And the song, "How He Loves," was born. Not with the idea of being a global sensation. In fact, he thought long and hard before he agreed to let David Crowder Band have it, because it was so personal to him. But then he realized that the love he was given was love that's offered to all. And if this song might be a conduit for others to enter into it, then so be it. And perhaps that might even fulfill a portion of the vision of his friend that he had for giving his life for those to experience the love of God. So let's take a look at it, and we'll take it verse by verse, and I will add a scripture and then a few questions. And during that time, if you would just contemplate a little bit and see what the lyrics say to you. "He is jealous for me, loves like a hurricane. I am a tree bending beneath the wind of his waves and mercy. Shall we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he?" Let's consider these questions. What does it mean to be jealous for someone? And imagine a hurricane's power. Imagine yourself as a tree. What feelings arise in you as you consider that image? Let's take a few minutes just to think with, or sit with that. as we go on, if there is a way for you to maintain the image and the feeling of being pressed and overwhelmed by the love of God, hold on to that. When all of a sudden I am unaware of these afflictions eclipsed by glory, and I realize just how beautiful you are and how great your affections are for me. Romans 8:18 says, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. Our afflictions, while real and legitimate, cannot compare with the glory of God. While this truth does not take away the affliction, it does give it a different perspective. Imagine that you hold your affliction in one hand and the glory of God in the other. How does it feel to hold them simultaneously? What thoughts and questions come to your mind? Let's hold those for a few moments. I think sometimes church does us a bit of a disservice. There is the temptation to read a verse like this and to say, okay, whatever pain you're going through is eclipsed by God's glory, so good on you. And dismiss the pain that you might legitimately be feeling. But I think God calls us to a deeper way, to hold both and allow them to inform one another. To hold the pain and allow it to inform your relationship with God and to speak into it and bring in the sacrificial nature of it and recognize the cost of a faith that will stand in the face of pain, of devastation. And holding the truth that God's glory eclipses that pain and allow it to feed into your pain and to give you hope for another day. If you take away one side of the equation, it rather cheapens the other. Well, let's go on. We are his portion, and he is our prize, drawn to redemption by the grace in his eyes. For the Lord's portion is his people. Jacob is his allotted inheritance. Deuteronomy 32:9. Have you ever stopped to consider that you are the Lord's prize and inheritance? That when the scriptures say that for the joy set before him, he willingly endured the cross, that you are that joy. What does that concept stir in your heart? And the bigger question, can you accept your role as the Lord's portion and inheritance? Let's consider that for a bit. grievous when we consider the cross. We think of our own shame and our own sin that has caused the death of Jesus. And that is certainly a way to look at it. That's the one hand. But in the other hand, Jesus saw the joy of us being free, of us being spotless, of us being his bride. And it gave him such joy that the sacrifice was worth it. And I think that is the better way to look at it. We are not condemned. We are free because of love, because of grace, because of mercy. So let's go on with the song. If grace were an ocean, we're all sinking. And I love this image. I think for many of us, the idea of sinking brings anxiety. There's the struggle to get our heads up above where we can breathe on our own. But this is such a lovely picture of complete surrender, of trust, that although we think we need air to breathe, apparently, you know, in this metaphor, we don't, that God's hand is there to catch, support, and love us. The complete surrender of sinking into grace. Ephesians 3:17-19 says, "And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power, together with all the saints," that's all of you, "to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God." In a perfect world, every childhood would be characterized by being rooted and established in love. But in earthly reality, that is tragically rare. Too many of our identities are founded on the wounded, the outcast, the loneliness, and the fear. But God offers us a new identity, one in which we are loved and accepted and cherished and treasured and desired. And this morning I walked past Ashley, and I happened to see a picture of her dear son, Rhodes, who was so longed for and is so cherished and is a picture on her iPhone. It's a cute picture. You all should see it. I wish I had it for here. That's what God longs for us. He carries us as a picture on his heart. We don't all hold that identity, do we? But imagine holding that broken identity in one hand and the one that God offers in the other. Imagine surrendering your old identity and sinking into the deep love of Christ. That he would be the air that we breathe, that we would surrender so completely that we would not worry about whether we have oxygen, because we are where we belong. What draws you to this image? And deeper yet, what do you resist? And what might be beneath that resistance? ready for the elephant in the room? It's kind of cute. There's a video of a dancing elephant that I thought would be absolutely adorable, but I couldn't find it, so imagine. And heaven meets earth with a sloppy, wet kiss. The idea behind this lyric is that the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of earth converge in a way that is both beautiful and awkwardly messy. Think about creation, the birth of a child, or even the death of Jesus himself. These miracles are both incredibly beautiful and incredibly messy. They disorder the status quo. They're a bit sloppy, in fact. Why do we have a problem with things being sloppy? Do we really think we're fooling anyone with our put-together Sunday morning act, especially God? What if we took that energy that we spend faking it and used that energy to revel in the love of God? What if we allowed God to gobsmack us with his love and favor? See, in the beginning, there was this. Now the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was swept over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. But then God created out of the chaos and void. And if you don't think that was a bit sloppy, well, then I don't know what. Because you have to eliminate chaos before creation. And by any imagination, that's messy. Sadly, we have no pictures of what that was like, but here's something to spark your imagination. Gobsmacked. So with that in mind, heaven meets earth like a sloppy wet kiss, and my heart turns violently inside of my chest, and I don't have time to maintain these regrets when I think about the way he loves me. Here's what that wave looks like when it meets earth. Now that's gobsmacked. Consider the imagery of the wave. If the wave is the love of God, and you are standing beneath it, where is your attention? On the love of God or your present regrets? Is there a regret, or are you carrying shame that gets in the way of your experiencing the love of God that you might consider releasing? Imagine standing beneath a wave of such love. Can you hold out your shame and regrets and allow them to be consumed and washed away by the tide? Thank you. The sloppy wet kiss lyric is one that's caused a lot of controversy. And in fact, when David Crowder asked John Mark McMillan if he could record his song, he asked for permission to change the words to unforeseen kiss. And many of the churches that you may sing this song at will have adopted that version because it's more comfortable, honestly. I think it's a little theologically flawed, but that's me. And I want to have all the grace for David Crowder in the world because he knew his audience and he didn't want to give them something that would cause them to stumble. So he changed the lyrics. When we introduced this song at what was Vintner Vineyard at the time and is now Liminal, we elected to leave the lyrics as they were because we thought it might cause people to wrestle and be a little bit uncomfortable. And at Liminal, we think that even more strongly. We love a good wrestle here. And anything that makes you uncomfortable is likely an invitation with God. So if I've made you feel uncomfortable this morning, then my job is done. You're welcome. But I think the seed of the discomfort is under our desire to sanitize God and to control him and to keep him in the box that makes us comfortable. And so I see these lyrics as an opportunity, a little sand inside the clamshell that irritates and irritates and irritates until you see a pearl. And the pearl of wisdom is this. The lyrics aren't about God giving you a slobbery kiss. That is not even what they say. It is two kingdoms crashing together and disrupting so that wholeness might erupt. Heaven meets earth like a sloppy wet kiss. My heart beats violently inside of my chest, and I don't have time to maintain these regrets when I think about the way he loves me. This is our summer of love here. We chose that as a theme, as our teacher's team. And I think this song personifies that. The way he loves is bigger than we can contain, bigger than we can understand, bigger than we can control, sometimes bigger than we want. But he offers it all. We're about ready to enter into a time of communion, so I'd like to invite the ushers forward. And as always at Liminal, everyone is welcome to the table. There are no qualifications. Arms are wide open. So in a moment, I'd like to invite you to make your way up what used to be an aisle. I don't know how you're going to get up here, but I'm just going to... Catherine Anderson wrote this beautiful little thing about, you know, how to instruct you to orderly come up. And just please try not to trip. That's going to be my instruction. There are feet, there are purses, there are props all the way. But if you are able to make it up here in one piece... that would be good. Then take a gluten-free cracker and a cup for the juice and make your way back to your seat. At the end of the service, there'll be a cart out in front, and you can place your cup outside there. As we take communion this morning, consider what communion is. It is an invitation for you to enter into or renew a relationship. Ooh, pause just a moment. Could you pour just another one? Just listen to this sound. Isn't that delightful? Sorry, that's not in my notes. I just noticed it. It's an invitation to enter into relationship. Relationship with God. And with everyone who is loved by God. In other words, with everyone. 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 This is the relationship that God has imagined, desired, and crafted long before the foundations of earth. God knew that humanity was frail and would fall away from what we were intended to be, that we would turn from Him and turn on one another. And God loved us so that He gave us the dearest part of Himself unto death so that we might live in freedom. As you take the cracker and juice, consider the sacrifice that Jesus was anticipating when He invited you to the table. Consider the love He has for you. Consider the joy that led Him to the cross was the joy of knowing that we, you, I, everyone, would be restored to who and what we were always intended to be. Consider that kind of love. As you make your way up to the table, carefully watching where you step so that you don't trip, if you are able to, look up to the screen. I've included a couple verses, several verses on love. And Dan, there's two slides, so if you can just rotate between the two of them. Let me just read them quickly, and then you can come up for communion. Oh, how He loves us so. For great is Your love towards us. You have delivered us from the depths of the grave. Oh, how He loves us so. For great is Your love reaching to the heavens, Your faithfulness reaching to the skies. Oh, how He loves us so. For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is His love for us. Oh, how He loves us so. The Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He will take great delight in you. He will quiet you with His love. He will rejoice over you with singing. Oh, how He loves us so. How great is the love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. Oh, how He loves us so. For great is His love towards us, and the faithfulness of the Lord endures forever. Praise the Lord. Oh, how He loves us so. Come forward to the table. that brings us to the end of our service this morning. I hope next time you encounter how he loves, it will mean a little more to you. He is jealous for me, loves like a hurricane. I am a tree bending beneath the wind of his waves of mercy. When all of a sudden I am unaware of these afflictions eclipsed by glory, and I realize just how beautiful you are and how great your affection is for me, how he loves me. We are his portion. We are his prize, called to redemption by the grace in his eyes. If grace were an ocean, we're all sinking. And heaven meets earth with a sloppy, wet kiss. And our hearts beat violently inside our chests. We cannot maintain these regrets when we think about the way he loves us. Go in peace.
If grace